Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that never condescends to our resident diva, Mary Pat, if for no other reason than she has more university degrees than Nathan and I put together. In any event, she's the perfect person to help us address the two movies we'll be discussing this week, both French and both made by women filmmakers. The first is Happening, Audrey Douan's study of a young woman facing an unwanted pregnancy in 1963 France. The second is Petite Maman, writer-director Céline Sciamma's imaginative look at motherhood as seen from a young girl's perspective. Let's begin this week's show by turning the clock back to a time in France when having or performing an abortion might mean a term in prison. With the help of co-screenwriter Marcia Romano, director Douan adapted the 2000 novel by Annie Ernaux based on Ernaux's own life experiences. Set in 1963, Douan's film involves a young woman named Anne, played by Anna Maria Vartolomei. A top student at a boarding school, Anne has given in to the natural desires of someone so young and finds herself pregnant. But knowing that she can't face the prospect of bearing a child, she looks for a way out, a trek marked by fear and frustration and the prospect of prison. Such a timely topic is given dramatic power by Douan, who captures Anne's predicament with little sermonizing or even by making Anne particularly likable. The resulting film isn't likely to change anyone's mind about the morals of abortion, but it does give a realistic look at what can come from criminalizing a woman's right to choose what to do with her own body.
Of course, it's difficult to talk about this film without coming up with the parallels to things that are happening currently in the U.S. And I don't believe that that was necessarily the intention of the filmmaker when she made that movie, but it does seem eerily prescient with respect to our discussions about reproductive autonomy in the United States currently. Dan, you've pretty much told us what happens. The thing that might be missing from your overview about the plot is, in the end, there are aspects of this that are really about relationships and the dysfunctional ones, the good ones, what loyalty means, what friendship means, what love means, even what I think education means, because we do have all of these people with whom Anne interacts throughout the course of this film. She has these two best friends, and she finally reveals her circumstances and situations to them. And unfortunately, she doesn't get the response that she had hoped for. She has a course of dealing with a couple of different guys, and we're not really sure exactly who's the best friend and who might be the predator among this group of people. We also have her relationship with her parents, most notably her mother, who's played by the French actress Sandrine Bonnaire. And they are obviously hoping the greatest things happen and come to their daughter, for whom they've sacrificed in order to send her to university. So I think if we're going to look at this movie, obviously the theme and some of the occurrences during the process of this film are pretty graphic. I think it would be fair to say that you're going to go there and at various points want to hide your eyes. And maybe that's important for us to see and experience and feel from the perspective of the woman who is affected.
This is a movie that I feel like just only, you know, maybe a decade ago would have probably been an NC-17. I mean, not just in terms of the sexual frankness, but the graphic imagery you're talking about.
Right. Because as we discover, when Anne is unable to get the assistance that she wants from various professionals, including those in the healthcare profession, including one who undermines and sabotages actually what she's hoping to accomplish in terms of terminating her pregnancy, she turns to increasingly more intrusive methods of self-help in order to.
And throughout that process, the film as a whole feels more and more claustrophobic because she is rapidly, as we see the time go by, it's 6 weeks, it's 8 weeks, it's 10 weeks, and we know she's reaching a point of no return at some juncture. And, you know, she's feeling that. And we see it. The actress, Vartolomei, she's so good at portraying that. And one of the things I really liked about this, two things I liked about this movie, one was her performance. And so that we can empathize with her And she's never really, as I said in my intro, she's never really likable. There's never any moment in which you go, oh, yeah, you know, I would really love to have her for a weekend and spend time with her, because she shows her frustration and she shows her loneliness and she shows her ambition. And it's all in a way that is, it's certainly not going to make people on either side of this issue change their mind. They're not going to go, oh, immediately,
well,
yeah.
But I think that's the power of the movie, is exactly. That the main character isn't some great do-gooder. She's not this isn't a polemic in that sense, in the way that she's portrayed, because she's not some saintly figure that all of a sudden becomes, yeah. You know, quote-unquote corrupted. She's just a regular college-age kid in the early 1960s who has, you know, the stresses and frustrations that I think everybody at that age has.
But at the same time, she comes from parents who run a bar. Yeah. So there's this whole thing, particularly at that time in France, she's trying to rise above her social station.
Right.
And it's very, very difficult.
And I think I just want to clarify kind of what you said, because by saying she's not likable, you're not saying she's unlikable.
No.
It's just that she's not presented in a way where we're supposed to, as you said, become chummy with her. She's just a regular
There's
person.
There's no
going
melodrama
about her life.
To this film right. at all.
Well, and she's also a young woman who knows what she wants. And this is a commentary, certainly, on not only the fact talking about pregnancy and reproductive autonomy in Happening, the title of this particular movie. Rather, it is talking about a sort of gender roles, obviously. It's talking about the fact that no one wants to discuss sex in any way.
Which is part of the problem.
Right. Yeah. That's an equally verboten
right.
topic. And as a matter of fact, the stigma associated with having sex, not just, you know, the situation in which Anne finds herself, is so off-putting that one of her friends has to whisper her own experiences yeah. with sexuality to Anne, I think as a gesture of solidarity in a sense. But I mean, at one point, Anne goes to a doctor and the doctor inquires, so have you had sexual intercourse or something along those lines? And she says no.
Yeah.
And she's pregnant. But
right.
the stigma of admitting to having a sex life, even though she was in her early 20s, was, you know, so problematic that she couldn't even in that moment be frank.
Well, and the obvious points of comparison with Happening are 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, the Palme d'Or winning Romanian film, which was also about a young woman seeking an illegal abortion.
Although and rarely, that, never, sometimes, always.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. The Eliza Hittman film,
American
right,
film,
which
yeah.
is a terrific movie which tackles a lot of the same topics. This film, Happening, I think, is sort of pitched in between those two, because it's not as minutiae specific as Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. This is almost about – it's a single-minded film in which it is just about her trying to get this procedure and trying to figure out how she's going to get it done. But it has these harrowing, extremely upsetting sequences that are right out of the Romanian film. And I think to warn people that you're going to get into really tough territory, but I think it's completely necessary. I think you need to see those sorts of things in order
totally
for this.
That was totally intentional on Diwan's part.
Absolutely. But you know, it's not in your face about it. Some of the most upsetting things that happen, the camera just plays on the main character's face, and that's almost as bad, because you're imagining what's happening out of frame.
Yeah, it's filmed close up.
Absolutely.
Throughout.
And it's also interesting that you point out that Sandrine Bonnaire is in this, because she was famously the star of Agnès Varda's film Vagabond from the mid-80s.
Right.
And this movie Happening also reminded me of Vagabond in the sense that it's following this young woman, and we sort of know how it's going to play out, because the woman that wrote the book that Happening is based on,
I don't even know.
This is an autobiographical story, so we know that, you know, she survives in the end.
I mean, it is a fictional novel. It is a novel,
right?
But it's almost a roman à clef.
Yeah, it's based on her experience,
right.
And so we sort of know sort of what the outcome is going to be, but it's all about the journey to get there. And I mean, it's harrowing and upsetting and unsettling. And of course, as you said, you know, in light of recent events with Roe v. Wade, it takes on this entirely new context. Of course, the reason that this story keeps being told is because this idea of women's bodily autonomy constantly being on the brink of being completely stripped away is sadly relevant almost all of the time. Like, there's a reason that we can point to many other films that deal with these themes, And all of them are gut-wrenching in the same way that this one is.
Yeah, I think ultimately when it comes down to it is that as important a topic as this is, looking at this as a film, it's an in-your-face study of something that we as a society should not ignore on either side of the argument. And that's what Dewan is telling us. You want to talk about this? Here's the reality of it. So at any rate, that was our discussion of Happening. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Petite Maman. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
What's going on?
Look. Up ahead.
What's that? Up ahead.
Look up ahead there.
You guys, look. There's something up ahead.
What do you see?
What do you see?
What do you see?
What do you see?
As we look ahead to the future, there's much we don't know.
So true. So true.
So true.
That is the truth.
One thing we do know is that SPR's mission to create a more informed public is as vital as ever. The more you listen to SPR and NPR, the more you hear the world as it really is. We aim to bring more facts, more experts, more of the perspectives that make your world a vibrant place. Thank you for choosing us as your trusted place for news and music programming. We also want to thank those who donated to the station now and through the years. You are a critical part of what will make our work possible. Your generosity and commitment energize us. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Happening. Let's now move to Petite Maman. Those familiar with French filmmaker Céline Sciamma, particularly her 2019 film Portrait of a Lady on Fire, are likely to be surprised by her latest film. Not that it doesn't tell a woman's story, nor that it isn't ultimately a story about the need for and stresses of intimacy, but that it explores such topics and more from a child's perspective. The child is Nellie, an 8-year-old girl who has traveled with her parents to the country home of her late maternal grandmother. While Mom and Dad occupy themselves with clearing out the house, Mom having a particularly hard time, Nellie explores the nearby woods. And when Mom, overcome by her loss, unexpectedly leaves Nellie alone with Dad, Nellie encounters a new friend who just happens to be, well, the film's title kind of gives everything away. Short, concise, with believable enough acting, especially by the twin actors Josephine and Gabrielle Sans, Petite Maman is a poignant exploration of heartfelt emotions as experienced by a sensitive, imaginative child.
I was not too surprised by the subject matter of this film because Sciamma has in the past made some really lovely movies about the experience of children, a movie called Tomboy that I really love, and another one called Girlhood.
Right.
Both of which have this very, you know, kind of fly on the wall sort of feeling. And this one is a little bit more stylized. It's almost like a little fairy tale kind of. It runs about 70 minutes long and
just as long as it should have been.
As it needed to be. And it has this kind of gentle, fantastical feeling to it. And I think she has kind of proven, even though Portrait of a Lady on Fire is probably her most widely seen film in the States, at least, I think Sciamma has really proven to be one of the best filmmakers out there right now, making films that are about how children look at the world. And this continues that trend. This is a really wonderful little movie. And it has the same appeal, I think, that any, I guess for lack of a better description, time travel story has.
Correct.
Because that's sort of what this is, mm-hmm. even though it's not as explicit as, say, something like Back to the Future. But you look at a movie like Back to the Future or Peggy Sue Got Married, the Coppola film, and the entire heart of those premises is that the characters are able to go back and see their loved ones in ways that they either had never seen them before or hadn't seen them in a long time and are able to say things to them or experience things with them that they wish they could have before it was too late. And that's basically what this film is about. And as the premise unfolds, based on the few things I'd read about this movie, and as you said, Dan, the title Petite Maman, I kind of figured out before I even saw it what it was going to be about. And the film opens with the young child and her parents who seem to be maybe separated or divorced. It's never really said
out. Yeah, there's something going
on. Something's going on there.
Right.
They're going to the maternal grandmother's house to empty it out because she's just passed away. And so I thought, okay, I think I know what's going on here. It's going to be this film about kind of generational gaps or appreciating the generation before you in a way that you hadn't before, because you saw this, say, an old woman as a young woman, and it you know, you saw a different side of that person. But I was not expecting the, I don't want to say twists and turns this take, because it's so leisurely in the way that it unfolds.
The richness of the storyline, including with the cane and all these little things that tie everything together.
It's so subtle. I wonder if kids will respond to this movie the way that adult critics have, because this has been getting rave reviews since it debuted at Cannes. But I think, you know, kids that are old enough to read, at least English-speaking kids or non-French-speaking kids that are old enough to follow along with subtitles, I think they would relate to this movie, because it kind of gets down at that kid's eye level and deals with the world from that vantage point. It's just really sweet and kind of a stunning little movie.
Right. It's important to talk about the two little actresses, too, because at first I didn't realize they were twins. And so I thought
they
it was the same.
Just slightly
yes,
different.
Yes, exactly.
Enough.
And that was perfect.
Yeah.
Because when you realize what's going on, then it's like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense. I also think, I mean, Nathan, you brought up an important point in terms of, I think kids do want to know about their parents' experiences and so forth. But parents are oftentimes reluctant to share their raw, naked emotions with their children. I know the first time I saw a picture of my reserved mother sitting in a fishing cabin drinking – this is a photo, a picture of her sitting in a fishing cabin drinking a beer and holding cards between her toes, wearing jeans. I was like, where's that woman?
I never met her.
Right. Yeah. I want to hang out with that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to hang out with that person.
I think your mom sounds awesome.
Yeah, I didn't want to hang out with my mother at that age either. But I think we're all going to agree here that Petite Maman is a wonderful little film. I think it's important for us not to build it up too much, because is it a great film? Well, I think it depends on the way you look at it. But if you go in with no expectations, just go in and let the film work on you, I don't see how you can't be charmed by it.
Well, and we've done a show recently where I talked about my new affinity for short films. I don't know why these filmmakers are insistent upon making these 2.5, 3-hour films. I mean, once you go beyond 2 hours, you better have something really important to say or some amazing visuals that are going to be, you know, stunning to the audience and so forth. And that's what I appreciated here. I mean, this is almost like an hour-long television program in terms of its length, but it was perfect. It was absolutely ideal.
You know, another thing I appreciated about Petite Maman was the portrayal of the father. Because, all right, there was
a, you were waiting for him to be a jerk.
Oh, exactly. There was kind of an estrangement that we've already talked about between mom and dad. But he is a loving, caring father, and the girl loves him. And it's like, oh, wow, that's refreshing.
There's a scene where he has a beard through the movie, and there's a scene where she watches him shave because she's been telling him, you know, I wish that you would shave your beard. I wish you would shave your beard. And he says, all right, the time has come. I'm going to shave my beard. And you just kind of sit and watch as she kind of helps him. She helps him lather up his face. Mm-hmm. And it's this sweet little moment, because you're totally right. I mean, I think we're conditioned with narratives about kids and family turmoil to think that one or both of the parents is going to be emotionally distant or completely absent. And of course, that there are themes of that here, because part of the reason...
Well, the mom is absent.
The mom is absent, and that's part of the reason that she ends up spending time with this little girl out in the woods, building this beautiful fort out of sticks between four trees that are all clustered together. That's a really lovely image. I think it's on the poster for the movie. But yeah, you're totally right. The relationship between the little girl and her father is really wonderful, as is and we don't see as much of it, the relationship between the other little girl and her mother. And of course, once we understand the context of all of this and understand what's really going on, that relationship takes... It becomes much deeper and richer, even though the movie never really
goes
so
into
much
it in detail.
Yeah, so much is unspoken here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back to what Mary Pat was saying about the two little girls, because I thought they looked so much alike. I thought, well, are they using CGI and they're using the same actress all the way through?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Is this a Haley Mills situation?
Right, exactly. But then, as you know, as the movie goes on and you start seeing close-ups, you see that they obviously are twins, but they aren't identical. I mean, not completely identical enough so that you clear their sisters, but
yeah, and I don't want to spoil too much about Petite Maman, even though there's not too much to spoil.
We've probably spoiled
too much. Anyway. But I mean, that's as I said, there's no like big plot reveals or anything in this movie. I think my favorite scene in it is the last scene between the little girls, because it's established right up front that the girl that's visiting will eventually have to go away once grandma's house is cleaned out. And the other little girl has to go away because she's having a surgery. It's a corrective surgery for a genetic condition. And so we know eventually they'll have to say goodbye. And as the weight of their relationship becomes bigger, and as they both start to understand how they're related in ways, they sort of come to terms with things, both spoken and unspoken, mm-hmm. at the end, and are sort of almost apologizing to one another in ways that are really emotional and in ways that I did not see coming.
And it's hard to pull this off. I mean, think of what an American filmmaker might have done here. I'm sort of reflecting on Dan's least favorite television show, This Is Us, where they've tried to portray these multi-generational things and they just don't quite nail it.
Sure.
That's why this film is so refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that was our discussion of the French film Petite Maman. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Happening. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the author Henning Mankell. To grow up is to wonder about things. To be grown up is to slowly forget the things you wondered about as a child. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.